Ladies and gentlemen of the MLOps community and non-binary, whoever you are, wherever you are, we have got an incredible talk today. We are speaking with Svet Penkoff, the CEO and co-founder of FMRI. A little bit of background about Svet before we jump into the full session. In his early years of life, he spent them building robots until one day he said, you know what? Maybe I should figure out how to make them think. So from that passion, it led him into getting a PhD at the University of Edinburgh. And at the end of his stint there, he went and joined a company called 5AI as a research scientist, where he led the motion prediction team. And from there, he was inspired because he spent so much time dealing with edge cases and model regression. He realized, you know what? Maybe I should try and figure this out and crack this nut once and for all. And that led him into creating his current company, FMRI, which we're going to hear all about in a moment. But what they are doing at FMRI is really tackling the testing problems that we can have when it deals with machine learning. So it's not exactly like software engineering testing, and we're going to be really harping on that today. This is going to be a podcast all about testing for machine learning. And we'll get into the nooks and crannies and the really nitty-gritty of it. So Svet, I'm super excited to have you on here. I'm really excited to talk about testing. It is becoming my new favorite thing to talk about when it comes to ML and especially ML ops, because it is so nuanced. And maybe we can just start with what I missed in that intro.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here and have this amazing conversation and discussion. I think it's high time we start talking more about testing from all the varied aspects it includes. I think I had a very great intro, like even better than the one I can prepare for myself. But yeah, ultimately, I really spend lots of time thinking about how do you build robots? How do you make machines that interact with the real world? And I think this is one of the unique perspectives. Me and my colleagues, actually, who also happen to be from the robotics background, my co-founder, Daniel, we've been thinking a lot about how do you make these machine learning models actually work in the real world. And if you compare to if you're training a classifier on images, you can easily take a billion images and train your model into work. But if you're building something for a robot, if you make the robot to move 1 billion times, it will probably break 100 times. So you really cannot do that. So the first step is, how do you become data efficient? And now the question becomes, okay, if you want to be data efficient, you really want to know what you sacrifice, like what is the performance that you're happy to lose? And now suddenly we're starting to think about, okay, what is actually a good performance? What is failure of the system? What is not a failure of the system? And this is really how I started thinking a lot about these sorts of problems testing. I think what I see very often when I speak to people who have done some testing, you know, when I ask anybody in the machine learning community, what is the first five things you can come up with when you hear testing? They start thinking about unit testing, integration testing, data cleaning, data testing, and so on. But these are really just individual steps of something much bigger. Like these are individual steps of like the software development process, not really the testing of the machine learning model itself. And I think this is really different. I think what we should start to realize now is that the sort of testing we do nowadays, and people do all sorts of amazing work in testing, but mainly it touches upon how do we take software testing tools and put them around machine learning and get as much as possible. But we are kind of staying away from the key problems there.
Ooh, all right. So you came hot out the gate. I'm going to give you that. There is so much that I want to unpack there. I think the first question is, you're really deep into the robotics area. Do you feel like this testing that we're about to talk about today is very specific to robotics, or can it be applied across all different areas of machine learning?
Yeah, I think just the robotics was the entry to machine learning, and just like we have a different perspective. And I think ultimately the testing we should be talking about can be applied to any machine learning domain, not necessarily robotics. I think just once you have some more classic field like robotics, like engineering, like the all the classic engineering that goes there, you suddenly have access to very well-established QA processes. And you start to wonder, why haven't we adopted those into machine learning as well?
Yeah, all right. So the next thing that you said that I want to unpack is this idea around when people talk about testing, they normally think about a few different ways of testing. And I know there's a lot of talk around data quality tests. You have unit tests, which are huge, and those are coming from software engineering, right? That's very typical there. What is it like? You made the point that those are just steps in a good process. So what exactly for you do you feel like is missing out right now?
Yeah, I think really the first step to tackle there is the fact that there is a very well-established common belief that it's okay to ship things that will fail a lot. I mean, it's inevitable, but it's not okay. I think we have to do everything possible to avoid these failures and only then rely on like observability platforms and deal with failures once they happen.
But wait, what do you mean by that? I think it's okay to ship things that are going to fail?
So I think just the standard mindset of anybody developing machine learning models, including myself and my team for a very long time, was machine learning is very hard. It's very complex, high dimensional data, very difficult problems. It's impossible to ship something that doesn't fail. So let's not just bother and just ship it, see how it performs, iterate in the real world and just keep improving. I think this is a great approach for like the first stage once you just want to try out a hypothesis. But if you figured out that this problem is worth solving, then you really have to step back and think about how can you improve your models? How can you make them more reliable without having to suffer these failures in the real world? Because ultimately, the failures in the real world is what prevents ML from solving all sorts of really amazing and exciting problems. But we just have to figure out ways to come up with reliable models way before having to deploy.
I see that. And so really, it's making sure that when you are working on the models, that you don't have this out of like, machine learning's hard, which is a cliche these days. And we really hear it all over the place. And you're not overly relying on monitoring solutions and expecting something to fail. You're doing the opposite. You're saying, I'm going to make this bulletproof. So by the time it gets out there, things will fail just inevitably, but it's not going to be like, I'm expecting that to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And even right now, many of these iteration loops are structured around the whole idea of we're going to deploy, observe failures to get more data, and only then improve. I think this is a very slow process, and it's risky, it's costly, it's hard for the team developing these models to be confident in what they develop. So I think it has lots of side effects in like this sort of mindset. So I think this is really the first step. What are the things that we can do to make sure we ship things that are as reliable as possible before shipping them, right? To do that, there is all sorts of industries we can look into. Machine learning has its unique points, but it's not the only industry with hard problems. So I think it's worth looking around in other industries and seeing what we can borrow and what we can bring.
Yeah, I love that. Not reinventing the wheel. One practical question that comes to mind is talking about these tests and talking about the processes that come with the tests. Is it on the machine learning engineer? Is it on the data scientist? Is it on the DevOps person? Is it a little bit of everything? And how do you set up processes so that each person knows what they're testing and what they should be looking for?
Yeah, let's come back to this just in a few minutes. First, let's figure out what really I think should be done and like really how we should be thinking about it. So one of the biggest problems for machine learning is really the whole idea of the open world. You never know what your model is going to encounter. Hence, we just give up and we just hope it doesn't fail too badly. And open world is an issue for any engineering discipline. Even if you're building planes, CPUs, like anything you're building, the open world problem is an issue. It just has different aspects. And what people really do there is they actually try to explore what is the closed world under which your system operates correctly, right? So what is the fraction of the world your model will be living in that it would work well? And truly understanding this is the first step to understand and to build robust models, right? So people call this the operational domain of the system or operational domain of the model. And if you look into fields like autonomous driving, where safety is the first, is the forefront citizen, there people think about this operational domain definition, but they really define it at the level of the whole system, the whole vehicle and like all the agents around it. But I think these sorts of notions can be lifted and applied to any machine learning model. So if you work with a model that operates on images, there are all sorts of things you can express as requirements or expectations that your model should work. For example, you can say, I want my model to work regardless of where the object is within the image, or with these particular ranges of the brightness of the image or the contrast of the image. And this sounds a bit silly at the beginning, but if you first sit down and think about defining these requirements very concretely, the first step, now you're suddenly in a very great position where you know what your closed world that you care about is, and you can very concretely say whether your model meets your requirements or not. And I think this is really the first step, figuring out what are these requirements. And these requirements often come from the problem perspective, not so much from the ML perspective. So I think people who are on the product side of the model, they should also be involved in this step. I think this is kind of slightly different than what many people think about when they think about testing. And then it's a matter of like, essentially anyone who's involved with the machine learning model, probably more on the design stage than the deployment stage, to figure out how to express these things meaningfully to a computer.
So basically, that deals with this world that you know, we can say. But as I mentioned in the intro, you have been dealing with edge cases all your life.
Exactly.
So what happens in those occurrences?
So I think that, yeah, that's actually a great question. So the next step, once you do that, every requirement you have is an axis of variation of your world. And now suddenly edge cases are not just something completely new happening. They're typically particular correlations between the different axes in the world. So, right, if you're detecting objects, maybe the object is with a particular color at a particular position with a particular background, and your model won't be able to cope with it. But all these three axes that we described, they're there. So now suddenly you can just say, okay, I have my world definition. Is there a position in this world, like a place in this world where my model doesn't work? And this is the predominant amount of edge cases you actually see. It's not really something completely out of the blue happening. So I think that's the second step. Obviously, we won't be able to solve all the unknown unknowns are unknown unknowns. We can't do much about it. But talking in a principled manner about the known unknowns, now we can suddenly find these particular values for which your model maybe doesn't behave well.
Is there a third step you want to tell us about?
A third step, I think, so this is really the first step. So once you define this sort of operational domain, now it's a very well-defined problem in terms of like engineering and like scientifically. You have a space defined, and the question is, can you find an instance in this space which makes your model perform poorly? And now I think that's very important because we have a concrete instance of a particular problem we can apply to testing, and now testing is something that's concrete, because people have different definitions. And once you have that, obviously it's a hard problem again. It easily can be a huge space. So how do you search for it? And I think the second step here that's quite interesting is to look into what people do in software testing. There is an article we wrote recently that we called "Why Don't We Test Machine Learning Like We Test Software?" And I think there is lots to be learned from what people do in software testing. So in software testing, there are really three core level of details you can test a software, a particular piece of software. So the first level is unit testing, right? These are individual components, individual functions. You can test their performance. Now, what the result, what a positive result for your test means in practice, it's up to the person who wrote the unit tests. The second, and what this allows you to do is like for every single input to the unit test, you can guarantee some sort of behavior of the system. Now, this is really the most empirical approach there is. Now, the most theoretical and like the most ground, like the most, the one that gives you most guarantees is something called validation and verification. And that's a huge field on its own. And typically, you only validate and verify thoroughly very small pieces of code, like the engine that deals with transactions on your credit card, or maybe like an airplane controller or something like this, very small pieces, because it's extremely costly. You have to drill down to the floating errors you can get and like, do they fall within the bound that you expect and so on. So this is obviously not something we can do, especially for the amounts of data we tend to deal with nowadays. But there is this third stage in the middle that's called property-based testing. So this is really trying to take best of both worlds. So you come up with your unit test function, and your unit test function, you typically tend to provide some sort of inputs that you manually type in. Property-based testing essentially says your unit test function is the property you care about. Now let the computer figure out if there are any inputs that are going to make your function unit test fail.
I see. So you mentioned a few challenges there, whether it's the cost or it's just that these things are a little finicky and the amount of data that we have is too much for trying to go through these tests. Are there other challenges that you see? I imagine as you have been knee deep in tests for the last mm-hmm. couple of years, what are the main challenges that you feel like need to be explored or need to be addressed when it comes to these three that you're talking about and tests in general?
Yeah, I think in terms of challenges, we're just about to open the box of Pandora in terms of developing these tools as a community. Actually, I think this is a very important topic. We should be talking much more as a community and have a very grounded discussion about what it means. I think this is really one of the biggest challenges ahead of us, because if you speak to especially machine learning scientists, they rarely even have written software tests, let alone think deeply about what a proper test for an ML model is. So I think we should start establishing this culture of spending time on quality assurance and writing tests is important, and you should be doing much more so than expecting a magical platform to test your model and deploy it and everything to be as smooth as possible. So I think, yeah, it's really the mindset of you should be putting effort and thinking about what's your requirement, what do you expect mm-hmm. of the model. Very often we just have some labels, and if the label doesn't match, that's it. We say it doesn't match, but maybe there is much more to it.
Well, you bring up a great point, and it's not really in the culture of neither data scientists or machine learning engineers, people coming from machine learning mm-hmm. in general. Not to say that not everyone doesn't write tests.
Of course.
But in general, if we're going to generalize, which is never good, but we're going to do it right now, it's not really in the culture. And there is something to be said, though. Like, I've heard the argument that at the end of the day, when you are doing this science, this data science, or when you're trying mm-hmm. to create something really quickly, you don't know if it's actually going to be viable, or you don't know if it's going to be able to solve a business case. And so you want to just get something out right away. And mm-hmm. by creating all of these tests, you're effectively over-engineering what mm-hmm, could mm-hmm. have been done much easier. So you have these trade-offs that you're trying to navigate. And you're saying, well, you know what? Let's just get something out quickly. I know it's going to kill us as far as technical debt goes, but we want to see if it works before we decide to do some test-driven development, right?
Yeah,
how do you look at that?
Yeah, that's really a great question. I think ultimately where I really want to be, like the world I want to live in, is to have the tool set, like the framework that if I want to express tests, it should be like 5 minutes at most, and it shouldn't be technical debt that is going to bury the project. So I think ultimately we should be building towards frameworks and platforms that enable people to express these tests easily. And actually, having these tests essentially allows you to say, this is what I expect of the model, this is what I want to achieve, this is my requirement. And having said this in stone at the beginning of your explorational phase is really important, because as a PhD student, I can tell you this goalpost can be constantly moving. And unless you have it fixed and you know exactly what to achieve, it could easily be like a 5 to 6 year project that should have happened in 3.
Yes, that is totally right. And the goalpost that never stopped moving, I think everyone listening can relate to, and they understand that. So I want to get into a little bit of the tooling, because I know you mm-hmm. are working really, mm-hmm. really hard on that. But before we do, I just want to tie the last little knot in something that you mentioned before. And I think it's worth really finishing this thought around software engineering tests and machine learning engineering tests, and mm-hmm. what the differences are, what we can take from software engineering. What, again, is it the software engineers that should be writing these tests? And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I really like what you said around, as you're designing the system, the people that are designing the system need to be thinking about what tests are going where and who is doing them. And so maybe can we just go in and get a little more clarity on what software engineering tests we can bring over with us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ultimately, I think that what software testing has done, it has developed these amazing CI platforms, continuous integration platforms that people use everywhere. And it's really the way to ship reliable product constantly, like updating every few minutes even. So I think this is absolutely amazing. If we are going to establish a sort of testing stage in the machine learning pipeline, it really should be in the same way, following the continuous integration pipeline sort of strategy. I think we can also borrow some testing methods from the software testing world, like property-based testing. I'm just going to share some examples with you once we dig into the tooling. I think this is a lot to take. But I also think we should be figuring out how do we tailor these things to the particular needs for machine learning. So this typically means your pipeline has to deal with like lots of data. That's the very first, very basic assumption there. The second one is very often you have probabilistic or empirical tests. So one failure maybe doesn't mean something. So you should be ultimately testing something probabilistically, taking expectations of what happens, not individual runs. And then I guess really the last very big question is, what's the API to write these tests? How do you express all sorts of requirements you might have for your machine learning model? Obviously, if you dig into one particular problem, it's very easy to do. But maybe if you solve, detecting vehicles, then you want to solve segmenting people. You know, these are different sorts of questions. And maybe you want to do natural language processing. I think there is something to be reveal there of like what is the core of the API that you need to have to express these tests, and then maybe specialize in the different verticals of ML. And this is the work that we, the machine learning community, need to do.
Completely. So let's talk about tooling, because you mentioned CI/CD tools. You've got so many great ones mm-hmm. out there, whether it's you're using just GitLab or Jenkins or your flavor of the month.
Yeah.
How in machine learning do you see tools differing from that? And where do you see the role of tools for what we're trying to do? Because this really comes down to MLOps, right? And so much talk and so much buzz comes out of MLOps. Like MLOps will give you this continuous training, continuous delivery for your machine learning models. How do you see tools playing a part in that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think especially testing tools, they really should be the tools we need to develop are tools that allow you to very efficiently, very quickly express all sorts of requirements you have for your model, right? Because when you train your models, you typically specify one loss function you optimize. And this loss function typically has to do very directly with the labels you care about. But there are all sorts of things you don't express in the loss function. For example, you want your model to be robust to brightness or to weather conditions or to different spellings of a particular word. There are all sorts of additional, I would call them non-functional requirements for a machine learning model that you should be able to express these very quickly. And I think this is really what's changed within the software testing industry for the past 15 years. I remember very long time ago being to a talk about test-driven development. Does it exist and does it make sense? I think now everybody's like, okay, we have to do tests. Maybe not pushing it to the absolute extreme of test-driven development, but testing is every software engineer has to write tests. And this is the way to maintain a healthy code base. And I think it's similar for machine learning. Now we should be start thinking, how do we express these non-functional requirements quickly? How do we enable people to talk about these things and measure them in a way such that they can have meaningful discussions and figure out what's wrong and what's not wrong and what they need to improve? So I think this sort of tooling, it's actually very, it gives lots of feedback to the machine learning team itself and also the people on the business side, because they very, they rarely understand the technicalities behind machine learning models and why they fail and what happens. And if they have a very problem-driven description of the tests and what's happening, it'll also be useful to them. So I think the role of testing is quite a unique one, because it's really facing the whole team in a feedback fashion, but like very strongly. I think this is the unique perspective for testing there.
So you also mentioned APIs and how if you're dealing with one problem and going very deep on that, it might be a little bit easier for you to design the APIs or figure out that difficulty. But if you're trying to span across many different mm-hmm. problems and you're dealing with mm-hmm. voice and then you're dealing with NLP and maybe you're dealing with some computer vision, how do you see those challenges being overcome?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think really, if it's that would like different verticals like computer vision and NLP and so on, ultimately I think there should be and there will be different plugins for computer vision expressing computer vision tests and NLP tests and so on. But I think ultimately there'll be maybe a couple of assertions that people would want to use, like the behavior of the model is consistent regardless of the change I do to the data, or you know, I think there are a few of these very core assertions that are just at the core of this whole testing framework we should be thinking about. And then there will be different plugins sitting on top. I think this is really the way to think about it. And this is what you see in all sorts of different, again, software testing fields where you have specialized testing frameworks for different systems. And there is really, I think this is the way to go, because it allows you to be as agnostic as possible if you want to, or dig deep into like the nitty-gritty details of your particular system. And you have this full range of like, you have the entire range of choices there.
You're hinting a lot at like your vision for the future and how you see things playing out. Can you give us maybe if everything goes right, what it will look like as a practical user?
Yeah, I think as a practical user, like the world I want to live in, that's my own opinion, of course. And I would love to hear what other people think in terms of like the world they want to live in terms of ML testing. Is essentially, I want to be able to quickly, when I start working on a new problem, be able to quickly specify all these non-functional requirements that ultimately lead to these edge cases and are the problem that we have to constantly fight. You know, spend maybe 10, even an hour just defining this and having them in a file somewhere somehow. And then every single time we add more data to the model, to the data set, or change the model architecture, or change even something in the code, not necessarily the architecture, have these tests run. And actually, I want the output to be, this is where your model works. This is the closed world your model works. Is this enough or not? Like, this is now the decision I have to make. And if it's enough, okay, let's ship it. If it's not, let's figure out how to extend this closed world where my model works. I think this is really what people do in software testing and like in lots of engineering fields, classical engineering fields, where they have spent decades trying to optimize their testing processes.
You raise an interesting point that I completely forgot to ask you earlier too, which is like you were talking about how it's a constant moving goal sometimes, or the moving goalpost. And when it comes to like data and data quality tests, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. when you have data coming in continuously and you're trying to keep those data quality tests up to date, is this something that you feel like we're going to have to continuously come back to and it's a manual process? Do you see that being automated? is it even realistic to try and automate that?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I have a probably slightly controversial view on that, but let me share that with you. So ultimately,
I love controversial views on this.
So ultimately, just testing the quality of the data, I think there is a level beyond which it doesn't make any sense. So now when you're at the point where you know you don't have like empty or non-existent fields, things are within like a distribution you expect them to be, everything you do after that kind of doesn't make sense, because ultimately you do want this data only to make your model work within the closed world you expect. So I think ultimately the quality of the data on its own, it should be measured really via the model and the performance of the model within the domain you expect it to work, right? Because if I tell you I have a data set with 10 points and you're like, okay, that's very little. If I tell you with these 10 data points, you can cover everything you want to cover, I'll be happy. You know, why would I spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars on storage and training when 10 data points work?
Is that realistic though? You feel like that is possible?
I think certainly in its most ideal way, no. There are obviously things that just the real world is messy. There is this computational complexity in the real world that simply we cannot compress and we have to deal with these problems. But I think if we think in this direction, if we work in this direction, there's lots of the processes we're using currently would be more efficient and optimized better.
I see where you're going. Yeah, that makes sense. It's the trend, trying to trend that way. We're not going to get to these 10 images being everything we could ever need, but if we are thinking in that style, then we are hopefully going to at least get to less.
Yeah, exactly. And we have the whole mindset of, I think this is also another kind of topic in my head constantly, is we have to have this mindset of simplifying things a lot for numerous reasons, especially like the academic community. It's very easy to make things complex. It's very tempting and it's very fun to make things complex. But if you want to push them in the real world, actually, they have to be as simple as possible. And sometimes simplifying things is not trivial, and we just have to spend time thinking about it. And we should just encourage people to do it.
So tell me about fMRI. And we spoke right before we hit record about the name and where it came from and why. Maybe you can break that down a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Let me tell you like the full story around the name and like the whole idea of how we started fMRI and our path. So essentially, as I said, I have a robotics background, and while working on autonomous vehicles and leading one of the machine learning teams, we were constantly trying to solve problems with the models we were working on. Obviously, we were improving them a lot, but there is always the next big thing you have to solve. And for us, it was really hard to understand why and what went wrong, or actually what could be improved. Whereas if you take my engineering fellow sitting next to me, they'll have tools like the robot operating system that has all sorts of visualization tools, and like, you know, like watching Minority Report in like 10 seconds, they'll be exactly able to say, this is why this robot did this thing at this particular instance of time. And I was like, okay, we definitely need that for machine learning. And essentially we started exploring all sorts of ways of understanding the data passing through the model and what happens there, because, you know, eventually it's like multidimensional data going through complex graphs. And we started with developing a very neat tool for visualizing models in 3D, essentially as the data progresses. It was really a debugger, and it would visualize how the whole model would behave, hence the name fMRI, which stands for functional magnetic resonance imaging. You know, they do imaging of the brain, we did the imaging of the neural networks. And this is how the whole thing started. And actually exploring and using it, we realized that's really important. That's a very useful tool, but actually there's this much bigger problem of how do you automate this? Because initially we built the tool around debugging, around enabling people to just interactively figure out what's going on. And after a while we realized, okay, there is actually a lot we can do around automating this. And automating debugging is actually code testing for many people. And this is how we realized, yeah, this is really the direction we should be working on. And yeah, right now we're essentially in the stage where we have some ideas. We have a platform that we've been developing for a while for testing. We're definitely looking for, right now we're at the stage where we have a beta version and looking for lots of feedback. So anyone interested, just let me know, LinkedIn or email, whatever. We can share a link. Yeah. Really, like, we are very excited to get this to a state where we can publish it and share it with the community. It's been really, really fruitful journey, because we've been thinking a lot about testing and what does it mean to test, and can we enable most, like, the biggest number of people to use this platform without specializing too much into particular details. So
as far as the vision that you laid out for us a few minutes ago on a perfect world when it comes to tests, how far along do you feel like we are, or you are, in that journey?
I think if we, you know, have a particular goal to reach, I think we've taken the first step in that direction. I think now we're at the stage where we have what it takes to start people thinking about it and discussing it and making conversations about it. And I think this is really just the first step, like, making people look in this direction. I think there is definitely a long way to go. There's so many things to be optimized, to be made more efficient. That there is all sorts of research to be done as well to make sure that, you know, you have more efficient tests or more complicated tests. All sorts of things can be done. But yeah, I think it's just like the first step in the right direction. It's a very small step, but, step by step, you'll get there.
Yeah. It makes me think about something that is, if people spend enough time doing this, like yourself, you're going to stumble on the value of tests and how to do tests really well. And then there's the other piece, which is you go out to the masses and you tell them, hey, you guys should figure out tests because they're really important. And so it feels like just over time, the more people that spend more time doing things with machine learning, testing is going to become something that is talked about more and more because they are doing it in the real world and they've had all these notches on their belt. They're starting to realize, well, if I want to save myself some hair pulling, I'm going to try and get this right from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I think testing is one of these, for any technologies, I think it's one of the last stages of development, of maturity of the technology, because this means that now the technology is deployed with the users. It solves some real world value. And now everybody who managed to get there tries to figure out, as we pour more resources, how do we make sure we improve what we do? So I think the question of testing would only become more and more popular and, like, more and more important, and there'll be more and more people involved. And I can't wait to, you know, have a channel on MLOps about testing and, you know, just to discuss crazy ideas.
Totally. We can make one of those. Actually, we will make one of those. And so if anyone is particularly passionate about testing, jump into the Slack community and get on the testing channel. We're making it right now. It's going to be a lot of fun. I would love to hear feedback from everyone that is listening about the testing and how you do tests, what you think about tests. Is it just too much of a pain in the ass so you never do them? Or are you really gung-ho about it? How do you feel like tests could be simplified? Like Svet is talking about, how do you see the future of tests? And let's geek out on tests, because it is becoming, as I said at the beginning, one of my favorite things to really think deeply about.
Yeah, absolutely. There's all sorts of questions. I think we being the practitioners of ML in the real world, I think we also have this whole responsibility to make these discussions very practical and pragmatic. I think there is lots to be said in, like, theoretical perspective, but keeping these discussions pragmatic and practical is what will ultimately unlock the value of testing for people working on these models.
There we go. I think with that, we're coming to an end. Svet, thank you so much for coming on here and talking with me. This has been just eye-opening because of the way that you look at tests, the way that you think about them, the way that you have a vision around where we should be, and hopefully you create that vision within the next couple of years. And that's about it. If anyone is listening still, thank you for joining us and thank you for listening. Wherever you are listening, it would be awesome if you give us a like or leave us a review if you're listening in podcast form. leave us a comment, whatever it is. Let us know what you thought. Show some love, however you want to do it. But that would be great for us. And as always, we will be back for another coffee session next week. Svet, thanks again.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's really great sharing all these thoughts about testing.
Totally. I'm super excited on it, but I think you could tell. So we'll see y'all later.
Awesome.